You guys ready?
They're all increasing enrollment, not the
renewal. You ready? Good evening, and welcome to the regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. It's October 4th, 2011. And the board did meet in closed session. We had a discussion about anticipated litigation, three different cases, and then we had a conference with our labor negotiators, and we discussed negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, very good. We'll go ahead on that then. We have no action on closed session items. Let's move to the approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion on the minutes, please?
I'll move approval.
Mr. Quisenberry moves approval. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Buckman, is there any discussion on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to presentations. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, board. It is my pleasure to bring to you two of our finest. One student, Brandon Saleta. He is a junior at Morro Bay High School, and he is on his journey to completing his Eagle Scout badge, and he's here this evening to talk.
Didn't Tyler Hoyt do that one?
No, he did a sign at the other entrance. It was
okay.
Yeah.
So, can you talk for just a minute about what kinds of things that you have to do in order to get an Eagle Scout project approved, and how much I happen to know it's very difficult and a lot of work. So, if you could just talk about that for a minute.
Well, first of all, when you start to make the project, you have to get the design approved by the principal first. And then from that, you got to get the scoutmaster, then your committee member, and then the overall, he's like the, he looks over all the Eagle Scout project. He lives in Cayucas, and then he has to sign it. And then from there, you have to start gathering the materials. Then after that, you just start carrying out the project.
How long did it take you to pull that project together?
Around a couple months.
A couple months. And yeah, then Mr. Millar was saying, who funds that?
Oh, it's all based off donations from the actual companies that you get the materials from.
So you have to go solicit those?
Yeah.
That's great.
That's a big part of the project.
Other questions from board members? Well, I just want to tell you, I was one of the founding assistant scoutmasters in Troop 214, and it's a great troop. And you're following really a long line of Eagle Scouts from there, and thank you very much. Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I would just say that it is very attractive and clear that you put a lot of work into it. So congratulations. I'd love to see you put your mind to how the balance of the school could be improved.
Well, thank you.
And,
me too.
And come back and let us know what you come up with. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Brandon, so did the actual building take more than one day? Was it a several-day building project?
Yeah, it took 4 days.
And I know that one part of this is that you have to lead other scout members. Did you have a crew that you had to be in charge of and supervise?
Yeah.
How many?
Say it was like three or four people that were there.
So that's a great leadership role. So congratulations on pulling that together.
Thank you.
I just want to echo the comments here. I'm really impressed. What an interesting, thoughtful addition to the school you made. Thank you.
Thank you too.
Great. And again, on behalf of the board, first of all, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. I think that's all.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Quisenberry.
No, I just wanted to thank you, Brandon, for your hard work, and I almost didn't recognize you from the photo, but good to see you again. You're now a junior, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
And just again, I think all the board members have expressed their thanks, and we as a school district and as a board of education really want to thank you for doing this project and helping beautify the school and then showing the leadership that you show as being an Eagle Scout. So thank you and congratulations.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Brandon, well done. We also have a San Luis Obispo High School Eagle Scout candidate, and his name is Kai Invick, and his birthday was yesterday, from what I understand. So happy birthday, Kai. And he would like to share a little bit of his project up here at the district level.
All right. So my name is Kai Invick. I'm a sophomore at SLO High. I've been with scouting for almost 10 years now, I think. And I'm working towards my Eagle project. I did it over the summer, and if you can get the first picture up. Anyways, oh yeah, there we go. I was up at the adult school, the gardens for the parent participation program. It needed some work. The gardens were fairly run down and didn't really have an entryway. So my project was partially building the lattice entryway that you can see there. Then if you skip to the next picture, we raised some planter beds as well to make it easier for the kids to work on. And then we also designed a gravel pathway. You can see if we can catch up. Yeah, so they were working on the actual planter beds. They were too low for the kids to work on as part of the program. So we raised them another 12 inches or so. It was about 90 total man hours to get everything done. It took us about 3 days. Yeah, so they were raising up the planters to a more manageable height. And then we actually, in this picture, we outlined a decomposed granite pathway, and we had to line the whole thing. It was just to create a path from the entryway to the planter boxes themselves. Yeah, and then we had to lay a brick entryway underneath the arbors, just trying to make it a more appealing place for the kids to be and more functional as well. That's one of the completed planter beds. Obviously, we haven't raised up the actual dirt inside. They're waiting.
And I think a side part of this that I'd like to thank you for is to get these small children and parents there, and you and the others act as a role model for mm-hmm. them. So I think that was really nice. And as you're out in the community gathering the donations, you act mm-hmm. as an ambassador for the district as well. And so I'd like to thank you for that.
Yeah, I actually went to the program when I was 3 and 4, so it's cool to be able to give back to that. You know? Yeah.
Catherine.
I have to tell you, Kai, I was walking in that area at the beginning of the school year, and it really caught my eye. And in fact, I was like, wow, what happened over there? It looks so gorgeous. I had no idea that a student had done that. That's a very impressive project. Did you happen to turn 18 on your last birthday?
I'm 16. Not quite.
Great. Good job. You didn't wait till you were turning 18 to finish it, right? Good job. Mm-hmm.
Other questions from board members? Mrs. Roger.
Well, just my thanks as well. It's very attractive. And when I saw your name, I wondered if perhaps you were related to someone we know, Martin Invick, and I see that you are.
That's right.
So, really well done. I mean, that is a lot of work. Very much appreciated.
One more person I wanted to thank. My grandpa's actually here tonight, and he helped out with all the construction, so that's thank great. You, Grandpa.
Okay. So I'm just curious, about how much was the value of the donations that you solicited?
I haven't totaled it all up yet. It was several hundred dollars worth of wood just for the planters alone. I think they totaled somewhere around $250. We built it out of Douglas fir, so it was a little cheaper, but it was very pricey, especially with wood prices how they are now. I think it was around $250 for the planters.
I'm curious, what would you say is the biggest thing you took away from the project?
It was really valuable going from start to finish with the entire thing, planning what I wanted to do and then finding materials for that and then actually carrying out the project itself. You had to have a pretty good handle on what was realistic and what you would be able to complete with the resources that you were given.
Well, great. And Any other questions or comments from board members? Again, we just want to thank you for the efforts that you put forth and helping the kids in the district. Really, as you said, coming full circle that you know, you got and now you gave back. So thank you and congratulations to you on hopefully soon achieving the rank of Eagle Scout.
Thank you.
Great.
Okay, we'll move on to our student representatives. And why don't we start with Tessa Reeves from San Luis Obispo High.
Okay, hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm a junior at San Luis Obispo High School. This past week, we had our homecoming week, which was very successful. We started on Monday with an assembly where we had skits to introduce the homecoming court. And Wednesday, we had a breakfast club in the morning, which was donated by Louisa's Place. And it's where the students can invite, like, their favorite teacher or a teacher they want to get to know better. And they get to bond with the teacher and have breakfast with them before school. So that was really nice to get, like, meet with your teachers outside of the school and talk about everyday stuff and not just school-related stuff. Also, that evening, we had our Powderpuff game, which was a lot of fun because the freshmen played the sophomores and the juniors played the seniors, and everyone always really enjoys that. On Friday, we had our pep rally after school, followed by a parade, and then another pep rally in Mission Plaza, where Coach Kelly kind of introduced the football team, and there were a lot of people there to show up to. And also that evening, we had our football game, where we announced the king and queen at halftime, and there were fireworks and stuff, so a lot of people really liked that. And then Saturday, we had our homecoming dance, which was a lot of fun, and we got a lot of positive feedback from that as well. Also, a next upcoming event on October 19th, we're having our Club Awareness Day to kind of introduce the clubs to the school and get people more involved in the clubs and just aware of what the opportunities we have at the high school. So, yeah.
Thanks, Tessa. And Haley.
First of all, I want to apologize for my tardiness. I hit every single red light coming to San Luis tonight, so I apologize.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I'm glad that you stopped at the...
I wasn't driving, my mom was. Wearing tights and their lovely hats and jester costumes. So it was a lot of fun, and all of the teachers thought it was very fun. Mr. Bedrigian got into another sword fight with a student, so... It was enjoyable. We had our first birthday club in the quad, and birthday club is where we honor the birthdays of all of the students on campus, but we do it by months. So we did all of the summer birthdays and the month of September, and a lot of people enjoy that because they get free cake at lunch. So it's fun, and the teachers do too. And in ASB, we've been planning our homecoming, and we also added... the Brig, which is our student section at our football games, and it's located on the track behind the bench of our football team. So you're right up there with the action, and you get to have all of that fun energy coming off the field, and you're right there, so it's really fun. And Club Rush was really successful, and a lot of clubs had many students join, so it was good. Upcoming events, our homecoming is this coming week, and a lot of people are very excited for that, so it's going to be really fun. This Thursday, we are having our homecoming nominee assembly where we are having our skits, and everyone's preparing for that. We're having rehearsal tomorrow night at school. And just all of the events for homecoming are next week. Royalty dinner, powder puff, our lunchtime carnival with the bounce house and all of that stuff. Powder puff, I already said powder puff, but... the game, the dance, all of that just fun is all next week. So please come and enjoy it with us.
So homecoming is this Friday?
No, next week.
A week from this Friday?
Yes.
Okay, great. Any questions? Well, thank you very much, Haley. And as always, we welcome you guys to stay if you'd like and hear what we're talking about and add your insights. Otherwise, we understand that you probably have homework or other things you'd like to do. So stay if you'd like, or absolutely feel free to go. We'll move on now to the Personnel Commission report. Ryan, are you going to introduce that? Or Dr. Prater, are you introducing that?
Yes, I'd like to, first of all, thank Mr. Kent Taylor. He's the vice chairperson for the Personnel Commission, and I'd just like to thank him for taking the time to come tonight to speak with us. Thank you, Kent.
Very good. Good evening, President Unger and board members. Normally, I would not be the person presenting the annual report for the Personnel Commission. Our chairperson, Navjeet Brar, has been ill, fairly seriously ill since May, and we expect that she will be able to rejoin us, and we're hoping that she'll be able to do that in January. So for now, you have to put up with me as the vice chair presenting this tonight. I will say it's been a bit of a struggle to have only two members on a three-member commission, as we have right now. You all know how difficult it is to be unanimous on some issues, and when you have two members of a three-member commission, you have to be unanimous on every issue. So we have our disagreements, but we've worked to overcome them and persevere until Navjeet can rejoin us. Just for those of you who would like a little bit of a refresher on what is the Personnel Commission, why do we exist, we basically exist to support something called the merit system, which is a set of rules and procedures that are aimed at making sure that the classified employees, that's the non-certificated employees, are selected, in other words, hired, promoted, and retained without favoritism or prejudice on the basis of merit and fitness. So we oversee the staff who carries out these rules and regulations, and we look over their shoulders and make sure that, in fact, fairness permeates the entire process for the classified employees. The annual report, of course, lists the various things we do to accomplish that goal, and I won't take your time to read those off on page 2. Just to kind of get into the guts of what was the most important things we did during the last fiscal year, and I will admit this is a fairly modest number of activities we were involved in. In fact, I argued with the staff that perhaps this report should be presented on your consent calendar, but they convinced me, no, you really wanted to hear this, so you will. I'd say the most important things we did all year was, for the second year, we did a performance evaluation of the personnel director. Sounds routine, but for years and years and years, the personnel director, at least by the Personnel Commission, was not evaluated. I'm sure that the superintendent did his part of it. So we think that's a good management practice, and so we carry that out. Speaking of personnel directors, of course, a former one moved up the chain of the organizing employee groups. Our staff did an intense review of 14 different classifications of employees, classified employees, and we, of course, spent hours reviewing those recommendations and trying to make sure that the job description does, in fact, describe what the person is expected to be doing. That is probably what we spend most of our time on is reviewing those reports. We adopted a proposed budget to recommend to you folks for the Personnel Commission for the year we're in right now. It was 4% lower than the previous year. So we are doing our little part to help the district with your financial issues. As far as the workload on recruitments, you'll see it on page 5 of of our report. I only take note of the fact that every single statistic related to recruitments for the fiscal year we just finished was up or higher than it was the prior year. Not surprisingly, in this bad economy, more people applied for positions. There's a lot of people seeking employment. That's reflected in our report. there, I think it's also fair to say that there's a very high quality of applicant out there. So much unemployment that the people who are applying are highly qualified. It seems to me we had a recently filled the position of carpenter, the district did, and there were several very well-qualified carpenters, as you can imagine, in this building economy that we're facing. So we're the beneficiary. The district is the beneficiary of that. Lastly, I would just take note of the fact that the number of classified employees, it was 412. The prior year was 392. A good deal of that is the special education, transfer those special education functions from the county superintendent of schools office. With that, I'm going to close and see if I can answer any questions you might have.
Yeah. I don't have a question so much as a compliment. It's always important to me because the classified personnel are usually the first people that the students see and the last person. So it's the bus driver or the crossing guard. And I just wanted to thank you for the hard work. I do spend time reading the minutes, and you guys do a great job. And it's very much a responsibility and respect for you guys that we have the great classified staff that we do. So just if you'll take that back to everybody, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly will. Thank you.
I too noticed the increase in applicants vis-a-vis the number of positions, which was is kind of dispiriting in some respects, but as you say, we get a good quality applicant. Also, I thought your report filled in the blanks for me on we end up taking these actions through negotiations, and so I noticed that it actually trickles down through the system, and you guys are very much involved in that. And I think some of the amount of evaluations and, I guess, classification reviews that you do was pretty startling. I mean,
well, they're very thorough, and I give 99% of the credit to the staff. They do a wonderful job of that, and I think the proof of the matter is that there are very few that come to us that are disputed by employee incumbents of the positions or the organizations who represent the employees. There's so much credibility with the staff that they've done a thorough, fair job that it's very easy when it by the time it gets to us.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Kent, for your service and also to the commission.
You bet. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from board members? Well, again, Kent, I just wanted to thank you and the other two commissioners as well. I don't know that I would say it's a thankless job. I don't think that's true, but I'd say you guys are sort of unsung heroes. You know, you come to these meetings once a month. I, too, have looked at your agendas and I've looked at your minutes, and there's a lot that you guys wrestle with each and every time. For I think a mere $25 a meeting or something like that. So really, on behalf of the school board and all the classified people, thank you very much. And probably the certificated people, too, because everybody supports everybody else. So thanks, Kent.
You're welcome. And just full disclosure, we're now getting $50 a meeting.
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
But the good part is we don't meet every single month. In fact, if the workload is not there, we don't meet. And at this point, we're probably not going to be meeting in October.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You should try that before.
Mr. Buckman, a report of Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program.
Thanks. I just wanted to pick up on where Mr. Taylor was on the financial issues. The only one that offers more, and there are 28. We now have 221 students, which is up from 138 in 07 and 08. Most of the increase this past year was due to a new computer class. Those that spearheaded that were Jan Fecho, Ted Zamorano, Dan Rapucci, Jim Waska, and it really paid off. Because of the increase in students. And Rita Delskamp just became our coordinator, attended a meeting. So that was very nice to have her there. She now knows that we get dinner at each meeting. So we set 5 goals for the year. We are going to create and update ROP videos that will be used to attract students and parents. We're going to increase the visibility of the ROP within the county and we're going to increase student access to ROP classes. We're going to increase the number of classes where students actually are in work sites, where they're actually out on a job site, and we're going to increase the number of UC-approved courses, which works really well because evidently the UCs and CSUs have suddenly realized that having the students from the ROP classes is the connection between the high school campus and the world of real careers. And they recently have approved one class at the high school level that they worked on together, which is the business applications of Algebra 2, which means I might have actually paid attention in Algebra 2, but I could not figure out any reason that I would ever use it. So I'm glad to see that that's changed. And then just a quick update on the online health class. It's working really well. San Luis Coastal has 6 students enrolled in the program. And interestingly enough, I guess there was one spot left over, and there's now an adult taking an ROP class, which hasn't happened in our county in a long time. So that's the short part of about a 4 or 5 hour meeting.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. It's distressing to hear that $400,000 was lost from ROP, which directly helps students and helps businesses actually in our community. So, okay, any questions for Mr. Buckman? Seeing none, we'll move on to our superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
Thank you. Part of what I wanted to talk about is Mark hit upon the substance of it all, and that is that ROP program personifies the type of damage that the state will be doing to San Luis Coastal in the sense that we are locally funded. We don't get very much from the state of California. And when they hit us with a fair share of pain, which currently is about $2.5 million, could grow by $1.8 million if the triggers are pulled. And the triggers are part of the budget adoption by the state, and we'll talk about that in a second. That the state generally funds. And the fair share of pain has grown to the extent that we're beyond just categorical programs. We're into ROP, we're into homeschool transportation. Ultimately, we could be into special ed in terms of the state's share of the funding. So as this thing grows, it puts a lot of uncertainty and question marks around some core programs. And what has happened is that within the ROP program, it's a JPA of the county school districts. And not only did we get hit, but Coast Unified, who's also a community-funded school district, got hit. And they're not sure that they can withstand or supplement the amount of money that is taken away by the state. What we have done is we've committed to backfill out of our general fund for the ROP program. So if Coast can't do it, and if Paso decides not to do it, then the JPA starts to disintegrate, and the ROP program is in dire straits in terms of its survivability. And what it'll do is it'll throw back onto the local districts the responsibility, if we want to accept it, of continuing to offer those types of programs. And that's the severity that local districts are beginning to feel because of the state's crisis. And the state's crisis is not getting better. It's disintegrating with the economy. The recent state budget that was adopted had, as I talked about briefly, a trigger in it that would be measured off of the November income by December 15th. The Department of Finance will collaborate with the Legislative Analyst Office and determine whether or not the state has met a certain level of income that would result in no additional cuts to education. If that level of income is not met, then there will be cuts of over $2 billion to education that will be implemented in January, and it will be catastrophic in the sense that down substantially. The economy is not recovering. It has at least stagnated. If it doesn't start showing some decline in the near future, then that would be surprising. Ultimately, those types of preliminary measurements by legislative analysts will also be looked at by the Department of Finance in December on the November incomes, and that's when the trigger gets pulled. If we don't have the level of funding from those particular sources, then the cuts to education will happen in January. At that time, all kinds of problems will occur. Like I said, for us, $1.8 million reduction in our expected funding through a fair share of pain. So we just have to be watching, and we have to be aware that when these types of issues become known, we're going to have our conversations too. And we're going to have to take a look at what our progress and what our options are for the future. Obviously, for us, it's not like it's going to be for our revenue in the district. But it's still a conversation I think the board should share, and we should ask. We should offer, and the board should ask for a certain amount of information, which we'll be happy to provide.
Questions from board members? Mrs. Sheffer.
I have a question. So that you're saying that the trigger will be, if the trigger is pulled, that would occur in November?
There will be a preliminary measurement in November. There will be a final measurement in December. And it happens bang, bang, bang. But by January, they're going to tell us that we have to give back a certain amount of money per student.
Okay, so this could affect our ongoing labor negotiations that we're...
It is a conversation, like I said, we have to have it. And because salaries are 85%, salaries and benefits are 85% of our budget, I would guess, yeah, it has conversations. We won't be able to cut, and I don't think we would recommend any reduction in our labor force. That's
sure.
Not the point. But we would look at how this will project into the future in terms of our ability to sustain our programs and our spending patterns and other things that we want to prioritize. But it could have a big impact on our labor negotiations as they exist right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman?
Yeah. Russell, did I understand you to say that one of the programs that they might cut entirely would be special education?
No, what happens is that we have to pay back a fair share of pain to the state of California. Because we don't get any money from them beyond our categorical programs, which is no longer meeting the level of the fair share of pain they want from us, then they're starting to encroach, if you will, upon other core programs like home to school, food service, and special ed. It's not an elimination of the special ed program by any means, nor would we compromise our services to kids with disabilities. That's not it. What it is that we have to pay money back to the state, and they'll take it from our special ed allocation. We don't get a choice what they send us. They just send us money. That's not exactly true, but they're not sending us much money anymore. But when they look at what they're sending us, it's called an appropriation, and those appropriations are deficited according to what they think we owe them.
Okay. Thanks. And thanks for clarifying. I'm sorry. What I meant was they would be taking money away from our special ed program.
That was true, yes.
Okay. And so we've just added a bunch of special ed to the district. Is that going to complicate things? Are we going to be able to backfill on that?
We don't add special ed as a optional decision. Special ed is dictated by the needs of the kids that are engaged in the projects, in the program. So what we end up doing is funding and adding to it according to the type of students' needs we have in our district.
Let me follow up on what Mark just asked, which I think was our previous decisions to bring special ed programs in-house. How, if at all, is that going to be impacted?
Well, I think what we end up with is still the same outcome that we have enjoyed, if you will, or we've experienced for the last 4 or 5 years. We're engaged in monitoring and functioning within our own program. Now, the district oversees the entire special ed program. And as a consequence, we're able to do a couple of things. We enjoy an efficiency of expenditures, and we're able to contract out additional seats to other districts and earn income from that. So there's a whole there's a whole mix of that. But
Dr. Prater, do you have an update on the Elementary Secondary Education Act?
I do.
Better known as No Child Left Behind.
Would it be easier for you if I stood up at the podium?
Wherever you're comfortable.
Okay. Most of you know, President Obama released the Elementary and Secondary Education Act flexibility report. We are in a very unique time in public education. This is, just so you know, for clarification, this is what most people refer to as No Child Left Behind. And so the flexibility that President Obama is referring to has to do with providing states flexibility around program improvement, those particular targets under the annual yearly progress within the significant subgroup populations. When by 2014, they're expecting under the original No Child Left Behind mandate that 100% of all students in English language arts and math would be proficient. Now, we all have our own feelings about that. However, it's done some good things for us as well, in that it's really brought to light what we now term as the achievement gap. And so it's provided us the ability to really hone in and focus our energies as educators towards a group of students that were not finding success. With that said, President Obama came out with this particular flexibility report, which allows states to basically apply for a waiver. Now, that waiver allows states, if they apply for this, allows states basically shelter from those increasing levels of accountability, specifically around the AYP results. Now, in our case, we are not immune to this. We have 5 out of our 9 elementary schools, soon to be 6 out of our 9 elementary schools, identified in program improvement. What that means, depending on the year of their identification, is the federal government and the state of California begin to basically impose restrictions and sanctions upon us. And it takes away our autonomy. It takes away our ability to do what we think is right given our particular populations. In our case, we have small elementary schools, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Many of those schools, well, 5 out of the 9 right now, are labeled program improvement. It would be a terrible day if an outside group came in and told us what our kids were going to have to do. And so to avoid those things and to try and make the best of it, the federal government has come out with this flexibility plan. Upon reading it, I won't go bother you with the entire report, but I think there's some things of note that are important. Now, Kim, could you go back to the logo for our district? Thank you. There are 3 points that President Obama suggests in the ESEA flexibility. To get a waiver, states would have to do 3 things, and I'm just going to bring this to your attention in light of the puzzle pieces. And you know, I have to commend the board for adopting this last spring before this report came out. It makes you sort of look like visionaries, because what they speak to in this report is exactly what we're doing. So I'd like to bring your attention to point 1, and I'd like you to look at the light green puzzle piece, which says college career pathways. They don't quite use pathways as the term. They use readiness, college career readiness. So the focus under point 1 is all districts in California, if you were to take that waiver, would have to demonstrate an increase in career technical education, ROP. They'd have to demonstrate a plan to make sure that students are exposed to rigorous curriculum and technical experiences and opportunities at freshman year. so that when, and they come up with plans, so that by the time they leave the high school setting, they have concrete, measurable skills that then they have a much greater opportunity to move on beyond high school with a set of skills that are measured, that are focused upon. So that's point one, and I'd like to bring your attention to that puzzle piece, because that is what we're intending on doing. The second point, I just would like to have you go around like a carousel. So the kindergarten staff has a chance to really accelerate those learning, that learning that goes on. I also like to skip over to one, to all means all. That means that we're looking at all of our students, regardless of their orientation, their background, their demographic, and we're really actively trying to measure what it is we need to do to help them. And classrooms of the future, giving them tools, giving teachers tools, giving kids tools to access the world the way it is now. Accelerate and specialized learning opportunities. This is an intentional attempt to not just accelerate our kids that are accelerated, but also to encourage kids who normally would not be given that opportunity to have accelerated opportunities. So kids that are identified in poverty, our Hispanic Latino students, our English learners, we want to encourage those kids into these accelerated and specialized learning opportunities. Giving them access is the key. The data culture, that's all about being transparent and finding ways to really know what's going on so that all does in fact mean all. The third point that the President Obama mentions in the ESEA Flexibility Act has to do with teacher and principal evaluation. He actually speaks to that as, and I'd like to bring to that puzzle piece where it says empower professional groups. Now, you can look at this in a lot of different ways, but really what that's about is the acknowledgement that we have to do this all together. This can't be something that hammers people. This has to be an organic, up from the ground up process where our teachers and our administrators and our classified employees understand what it means to build their own capacity to meet the needs of all kids. This is a difficult educational environment in our country right now. As Russell mentioned, finances are precarious at best. But we can't worry about that and get frozen. We can't get stuck into inaction. What you see up there right now in this is in motion right now in our school district. And this ESEA flexibility report or plan that is being presented nationwide, I think shows tremendous insight and vision, because it allows districts like our own to take ownership and responsibility for what is truly our responsibility, which is our children. And I want you to know that we're doing it. Now, what I'm presenting to you tonight is the value that I see in each of these three points as they relate to what we're doing. Specifically, the college career readiness, the closing the achievement gap, and the teacher/administrative evaluation system is an important piece to getting us where we need to go. And I just wanted you to be aware of that, and I know many of you already know this, but I just wanted to publicly encourage all of us to stay tuned to what's going on at the state level and also at the local level, because it does impact us. Are there any questions?
Yes. Could we get a copy of that document that was up there first? Because I've looked at some media reports about what was entailed in the additional flexibility.
You bet.
And I will take credit for the vision to hire you, so I guess.
Yes, I'll make sure you get a copy of that report.
Thank you very much for this. I appreciate it. I have just one question. As I understand it, the waivers are state by state, and so we as a district can't decide. It really has to start in the California Department of Education.
You're absolutely right. Okay. And unfortunately, at this point, well, and I guess it depends on where you're standing. California has the nation's most rigorous standards already. The question is, and they're working towards the Common Core standards. So it naturally flows that we need to develop an evaluation system that's quite frankly better than the current one we have in terms of student assessment is really what I'm after there. And so right now what the state superintendent of schools, Tom Torlakson, is saying is that the flexibility report is fantastic, but we want to make sure it's funded and not another unfunded mandate. And so the way I look at it is the merits of the flexibility plan are what we're after as educators, but where are the strings and what are the details and the nuances? And I don't quite understand all of that. I'm sure special education funding's a portion of that. I'm sure the categorical system, federal categoricals, are a consideration. It's unfortunately, it's got a little of that race to the top flair to it. But the truth is, it's good for our district, and I'm speaking on behalf of our district, and I think it would be a fantastic situation for us because it gives us real local autonomy, which is really what Arnie Duncan is after, with accountability. We should not ever lose accountability for all of our kids, and that's what you have in front of you before all of this came up. So that's what I'm interested in doing. So,
And I think my understanding is that CSBA is approaching this cautiously as well, wondering what the implications are. And it'll be interesting to me to ultimately see how it shakes out on the state level, because the last time we looked at the race to the top and entered the race to the top fray, some very bad laws were passed in the dead of night. And I'm hoping that we have a more transparent, open discussion about that on the state level. Thank you, Dr. Prater. We'll move on to public comment. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board this evening? Sir.
Thank you, Zeke Turley, AGP Video. I just wanted to comment that young man that had that project getting those gardens together. My kids worked in those gardens, and I can see how it's going to be so much better for them to do it. They were 6 and 5 years old, and it's going to be so much better. And I just wanted to add my commendations to what he did. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. And, it's just amazing to me how, it's sort of that pay it back. The little things just affect so many people. We're really talking about several generations here. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that, it's a real thing. Like you say, it goes on and
yeah.
on. Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to speak to the board? And I have a note here. Did you folks want to make a comment to the board this evening? Now would be the time.
We wanted to talk to you about the Laguna Gymnasium.
Now would be the time to do that. Right. And one thing I'll just let you folks know is I understand that you're going to be talking to us about the Laguna Gymnasium, and we can't respond to you, but we certainly will listen to what you have to say. So thank you very much. Go ahead, and please state your name.
I'm Karen Harvey Gray.
I'm Douglas Harvey.
And we're the children of William F. Harvey. We're writing to you on behalf of the William F. Harvey family. We are hoping that you will consider naming the Laguna Middle School Gymnasium in our father's honor. My father started at Laguna Middle School in 1970 when it first opened, transferring from the old San Luis Junior High here. He coached the first basketball team for Laguna and was the coach until the late 1980s. He continued his work at Laguna as counselor until he retired in 2000. He then continued to volunteer his time at Laguna, helping the kids who needed extra attention until his death on November 18, 2009. I started a cause for renaming the gymnasium, and I think you will be able to see that many people will agree with me. I understand that buildings are not named after people, but we do have Mott Gym, Holt Field, Coates Courts, to name a few. We would be willing to compromise with you and have the basketball court named in his honor. My dad deserves this honor in his memory because my dad was what made Laguna Gym what it is today. He not only deserves this honor, he's earned this honor. He worked for San Luis School District for 40 years. And what we're asking is that you will consider our proposal. Read the letters that we have here that I would like to leave with Dr. Prater. We believe that he needs to be recognized for all that he has given to his students. His students were like his kids. He loved coaching basketball, and when he retired in 2000, him and my mother bought the, as you walk into Laguna, there's a board up on top that has all the basketball players' names for each year that they're playing.
We have a lot of support from the community and from former teachers and former students in our idea, and we realize that you can't respond to us at this time, but we just really thank you for your time and your consideration in this matter. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming and presenting.
And am I able to leave this with
you? If you would, yes, please, Mrs. Holmes will take those from you. And then those will be made available to all of the board members, and we'll read all of those. So please rest assured that we will, and we'll give that consideration.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and then Mr. Millar points out that we would like to express our condolences to you on the loss of your father, even though it was a couple of years ago, and I suppose a belated acknowledgement to his service to our district. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll move on to item number one, which is a determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Mrs. Delkiskamp, and this is a public hearing.
Yes, it is. And you should have received a revised copy of this agenda item. We received some additional information after the printing of the agenda, so we have made a correction for you. Amy Shields and I work with our district staff and our school staff to determine that we have sufficient textbooks for all of our students. We do this every year according to education code, and what we check are all the core subjects as are listed in the first paragraph, as well as foreign language, our health courses, and then all of our science laboratory equipment. You'll see towards the bottom of the item a box that says the areas where we are not sufficient at this point. In grade 3, you see math and science that we are lacking some books there due to increased enrollment. We actually have a little bit, we have a little bubble of students going through. And in the springtime, when we assess our situation, we thought, okay, everything looks good, we should be okay. But as we actually work through all the students arriving in school in the fall, we determined we were lacking some books. Just so you know, our math books arrived today. So those will be in the hands of the kids real quickly. Science, we're going to follow up on. That's for third grade. And then we did have an increase in enrollment at fifth grade that wasn't expected. Those books have also arrived, so those will be going out to the schools tomorrow. Algebra 1 and Integrated Science, where we're needing these books, are at San Luis Obispo High School. They had an increase in their ninth grade class of about 56 students. Just so you know, we were able to borrow books, and that's a lot of what we do. We borrow from one schooling so that we can get books in the hands of kids while we're ordering. So we were able to borrow from Laguna some Algebra 1 books, and those have already been shipped over to San Luis Obispo High School to meet that need. And Integrated Science, Morro Bay High School was generous, and this week those 40 books will get to San Luis Obispo High School. So what happens in the meantime is there's some sharing of books until the books arrive, but we meet our legal requirements because as long as we have everything in place within 8 weeks of when school starts, we are meeting those requirements. One thing you might also want to know about why this can be a little bit challenging, especially at San Luis Obispo High School, is because since they're on the trimester system, it's not like at other schools where we can just say, oh, we have this many sixth graders, we need that many books. Because they're on the trimester, not all ninth grade students are taking integrated science at the same time. And so they don't need one book for every ninth grader, and in fact, they're helping us to be fiscally prudent by not ordering one book. Otherwise, we'd have a stack of them sitting somewhere. And so it gets a little bit tricky there, but it all ends up working out, and I don't have any concerns that by the time we come back in a couple of weeks, we'll be able to have our resolution and know that all of our students have the books they need.
Question. Okay. We'll go ahead and take questions, and then we'll open the public hearing. So I'm going to start with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and go to Mr. Quisenberry and then Mr. Millar.
Mrs. Duncan-Scamp, so the number, the 56 additional students that we have in Algebra 1 this year, is that because we're encouraging more students to take Algebra 1 in ninth grade? Is that a positive thing in a way that we weren't anticipating because of perhaps our initiatives to move students into the math programs?
Actually, we just have 56 new ninth graders, more than we had last year at San Luis Obispo High School. And so I'm sure that affects how many then are taking Algebra 1.
I see. Okay, thank you.
That does not mean that these additional books we had to order are a substantial financial impact.
That's correct. Means overall. That's why we have a plan, because books are very expensive, and why we have a plan that says, you know, this year is when we're going to replace these and so forth, and because we can't replace them all, and we can't just, you know, every time somebody loses a book, replace it.
And none of the shortages are because of changes in the text adoption cycles or some of those things that we've seen the last couple of years where they lengthen the adoption cycles and that kind of thing.
No.
Great. Thank you, Rita.
Okay, and to me this is just interesting because it's sort of starts to argue for e-readers and electronic text at some point. I'm sure that, as I know very well, that's a discussion that people are having on many levels. So I'll go ahead and open this public hearing regarding determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this issue? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. We'll move on to item number two, Dr. Prater.
Yeah, I will go ahead and read this because I think it's summarized better than I can speak to this. It's regarding the California Voting Rights Act. Prescribes election practices for publicly elected boards with the intention that trustee areas not be discriminatory toward minority voters. Districts whose trustees are elected at large are at risk. Based on advice of council and discussions held at the board meetings of March 16, 2010 and August 17, 2010, San Luis Coastal agreed to use the results of the 2010 national census and undertake a demographic study to determine the risk and consider a revision to our trustee areas and voting methods. Lozano Smith has served as legal counsel and as at cost savings and measure of efficiency, will continue in this role on behalf of all districts in San Luis Obispo County. They will subcontract for a demographer. Attached is the proposal submitted to the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education for these joint services. So, in short, the superintendents met with Dr. Julian Crocker at our superintendents council meeting, and we agreed that this would be a wise and efficient way of approaching the CVRA issue. And it's a proactive way. It'll save, collectively, it'll save about 50% of what it would cost if we went about this individually. And we all agreed to bring it to our boards and get approval on this. In our case, the fiscal impact for San Luis Coastal for the demographic study is $849. And legal services in total throughout the county for this project will be $58,800, with San Luis Coastal's share amounting to $9,876. And these costs will be paid for from the general fund. So this, I think, is a prudent way to approach it proactively, and I'm recommending that you move forward with this.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this issue? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Millar and then Mr. Quisenberry.
I just have kind of a procedural question. The recommendation is that we authorize the superintendent or designee to execute the necessary agreements. That strikes me as just slightly one step ahead of, should we approve the agreement as outlined by the attached letter from the County Office of Education perhaps first, and then authorize the superintendent of designee to go forward? Because so far it just seems that the authorizing the superintendent to execute necessary agreements is kind of one step further down the road than, you know. So
that is a good question.
Maybe it's my lawyer thing, but
that is a good question, and I'm not sure. You know, I am not sure what the correct answer to that is. What I could do is investigate this, bring it back to the October 18th meeting.
I have a suggestion for that, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Quisenberry. Perhaps whoever makes the motion can make the motion in such a way that it reflects the necessity of approving the proposal as outlined by Dr. Crocker, and then
that's
the follow-up with...
Yeah.
So, Mr. Quisenberry.
You know, mine may be kind of nitpicking here. I'm a little confused. It shows our share is $849. And then as I look down at the chart here, district cost, I see it, the figure 849 for the County Office of Education. And then I see our share as 9,876. And then I see it over here in the print. So could someone explain that to me? Is that just a coincidence?
That is my own misreading of that chart.
Oh, okay.
So I will need to double check on this to confirm the actual amounts. And let me just interject the kind of the reason the recommendation is worded the way it is because none of the districts are contracting directly with Lozano Smith for this work. The county office will do that and backfill the participating districts. But I need to check on these financial figures.
So, Dr. Prater, when does this need to be done?
Well, I believe the request is that if we can get this back to the county by the end of this month,
okay,
we're in good shape.
So, I'm wondering if...
Oh, if that clears anything up or not.
Yeah, I think it's... Sorry.
Your district's cost. Right.
It appears there are two costs. One is for the legal services and one is for the demographer. And the smaller number is for the demographer. It's being subcontracted by Lozano Smith. That's the fee that's being shared by the various school districts. Right. So there are two different charges, and only the legal charge is referenced in the chart.
Correct. So it looks...
Well, I think that the demographer cost, since it's subcontracted through Lozano Smith, is the costs are subsumed into the 58.
Right. So the total cost would be the $9,876, is my understanding. So if that's the case, then we could move.
Yeah, but this many questions,
forward.
I think maybe.
Yeah, let me spend a little time with this, and it's still within our time frame. If I brought this back October 18th,
right?
And I will double check this, and make sure it's a little tighter.
So it sounds like we have a consensus from the board that we'll bring this back at the next board meeting and clear up any of the questions we have. Okay, we'll move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to have an item pulled. Approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Approval to teach a class outside of credential authorization. Acceptance of donations. Disposition of surplus property. Approval of furniture and equipment requests. Approval of purchase orders. Approval of warrants and payroll. Approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. And seeing none, is there anybody from the audience that would like to address the board on these items? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion. Mrs. Sheffer.
I move that we follow the action consent items for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and approve them.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 12, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to have anything discussed in advanced agenda? Mr. Buckman.
Just real quickly, I noticed on the master calendar that the day of the special ed teacher is coming up, and I'm hoping that we will have a resolution at the next meeting to honor them. So I don't know if that has to go through the whole advanced agenda, but I'd like to suggest that we do that.
Okay. Thank you. And I would support
yes.
that as well.
Yeah.
Anyone else? You know, I do have a question about how we determine whether we name schools or property, and I'd like some clarification on that because I do know that, yeah, and I'd be interested what board policy says because I do know, as the Harveys pointed out, we have Taylor Field, Mott Gym, C.L. Smith School, Teach School. So those are named after people. Senshimer School, absolutely named after community folks. And so I'd be curious how we do that. And maybe if some information in the Friday packet would be good enough for me.
Okay. Thank you. I will do that.
Okay. Great. Mr. Quisenberry.
Just a comment on that. I'm not sure at the actual year or date. There was a discussion about the wrestling room at Morrill Bay High School. And I don't know if anybody wanted to investigate that. We had a teacher, a longtime teacher there, Sam Boyd, and there was a move to name that. I think there's a plaque there. I don't know if there was actually a name given to that. But anyway, just that's somewhere in the past, and it's not too distant. I think it's about 8, 9 years ago.
Okay, let's move on to item 13, reports by board members. Are there any board members that would like to make a report this evening? Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. Dr. Eisengrath-Rothard, Mr. Quisenberry, and myself and Ellen Sheffer got to do mock interviews at the high school, and I found them wonderful. I thought the students were great. My question is revolved around applying for a job as the person that would clean up an auto shop. And in an attempt to extend that conversation, I did ask each of the three students what their favorite car was because it was auto shop. And I was amazed to find that the two out of the three were very much in favor of the new Camaro. And I just found that. But the kids were great.
Dr. Eisengrath-Rothard.
I was able to visit Hawthorne, and Mr. Collins showed me around and reported to me that he has the highest enrollment ever in the history of the school, 350.
They were. I had the good fortune to have three second language students in interviews. One, obviously, an immigrant student, and then two exchange students, and they performed extremely well. I would have hired the three of them on the spot. So that was really wonderful. And then, again, I also attended the San Luis Morro Bay game, and I wanted to commend Coach Dave Kelly and his staff for an outstanding job, and also John Andre and his staff. It was a great game. It was well played, and great sportsmanship was exhibited there. And then also I had the opportunity to announce the Morro Bay Pioneer Valley game. And, again, it was good to see all my old colleagues. And a retired principal showed up. Mr. Pete Sotovich was there also to attend the game. So thank you.
Great. And I just wanted to close with a couple of things. First, just a reminder to the board that I believe it's 10 o'clock this Friday morning at the County Office of Education. There's going to be a presentation by an attorney from Fagan, Fulfrost, and Friedman, I believe, on electronic media. And it goes specifically to the things that we talked about when the folks from Pack Beach came here. And so I believe you'd need to get in touch with Valerie Kraske at the county office if you're interested in going to that.
If you would let me know, because there is a fee to attend, and I need to register with everybody.
I believe it's 10 o'clock, and it's a legal luncheon, and so luncheon is served. I went to the administrator's one a couple of weeks ago, and again, it was really interesting, and I would encourage everybody to go. And then last thing, on a sad note, I'd like to acknowledge that both Mrs. Sheffer and I went to the memorial service for Raymond Colley. And Raymond was, I believe, a 31-year-old former student of San Luis Obispo High School. His mother, Carol, secretary at C.L. Smith School. The funeral home was packed, and with friends of Ray's who attended San Luis Obispo High School with him, the San Luis Coastal Unified School District family, families of people. Mr. Lamprecht led a choir of alums in singing a tribute to Ray, and there are a bunch of people who should be thanked. Specifically, I just want to mention the C.L. Smith PTA, who provided the barbecue for the reception that was held afterwards at Cuesta Park. El Choro Regional Park, I'm sorry. And then also just our own Val Harrigan, who just has really been a rock and really supported the family and has supported Carol. So on that note, I'm just going to close, and if there's nothing else, I think now would be a good time to adjourn this meeting.